Okay, I have the chair adjusted. Joe McGrailey sitting in here for Áine Lawlor this week. You're joining us in the podcast studio of RTE in the basement of Leinster House for our latest podcast. It's the middle of Thursday afternoon in the Dáil at the moment. There are statements for International Workers' Day, and the Minister, Peter Burke, is on his feet there. But joining me here is Paul Cunningham, political correspondent, Juliet Gash, the editor of The Week in Politics and ace reporter, and Micheál Lehane, political correspondent as well.
Were you not ace reporters as well, me and Micheál?
No. Well, listen, you can get ace correspondent as well if you stick with it, Paul.
Okay.
We're going to start off with the whole report from the Electoral Commission on Commission Toghan today, and you were there for the launch of this. It was a review of the registers of electors around the country, Juliet. And some really interesting findings.
There really is. It's a hefty tome, as every journalist there breathed a sigh of relief. There is an executive summary, and there was a very handy press release giving us all the pointers. The electoral register is a bit of a misnomer because there are 31 of them. So there is one for every local authority in the country, and they don't talk to one another. They're not cross-referenced except for the four Dublin local authority registers. So Paul Cunningham registers in South Dublin County Council, and if he sneakily also registers in Dublin Bay North or whatever, if he's on Dublin City Council,
That'll be picked up. Paul would never dream of doing something like that.
Yeah, definitely. Name like Paul Cunningham, there's maybe a couple of Paul Cunninghams.
Out. Yes.
My name is a bit more tricky. Nevertheless, I could register wherever I want and I'd probably get another polling card. And that's
okay,
the difficulty.
So they talk to each other in Dublin, but outside of Dublin, they don't.
No, and they gave us really interesting anecdotes, I suppose, because the local authorities have always maintained these electoral registers for 100 years. So that has always been their job. It is not the job of the Electoral Commission to do so. They're just doing this report into what are the problems with them. Basically, there are hundreds of thousands of voters on these registers that shouldn't be. People who have passed away, people who have emigrated, or people who have moved from one local authority area to another, and they just haven't changed their address.
And do they know how many hundreds of thousands
they
are
don't.
On the registers?
So it has been suggested by Teresa Reedy, political scientist in UCC, that there's anywhere between 350,000 to 500,000 that are duplicate names. They said they can't actually tell because they don't know the level of inaccuracy, and that's the difficulty. That's what this project is all about, I suppose. And one of the interesting things they were telling us is that, you know, in some local authorities that have maybe more resources or have put more effort into fixing their electoral registers, that people actively listen to the death notices, even on local radio, to go, oh, such and such a person has died.
Right,
maybe
okay.
We should write to the family and say, shall we take them off? They are proactive. And some were singled out as having been really proactive. Louth was one. And then there are eight local authorities that were, I suppose, named as having the biggest difficulties. And in order of sinning, no, not sinning, in order of, I suppose, inaccuracy, it's Sligo, Donegal, Galway County, Cork County, Carlow, Cavan and Mayo. And they have the lowest voter accuracy.
And is it the case that they found that there are 11 local authorities, is it, where the number of people on the register exceeds
exactly
the number of voters?
Yeah, essentially.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah, so they're not going off the census, which came out in 2022, or which was carried out in 2022. They got figures from the Central Statistics Office last year. So they're very up-to-date statistics on how many people are over 18, you know, are regularly resident in the state. And so therefore
so
would
the figures
be
don't compute.
Eligible. They don't compute. They've just too many people who are on the register that should be able to vote.
So how many votes do you have, Micheál Lehane?
I've only one. I actually got taken off the register in Kerry and barely got on the one in Dublin in 2007. That was the time Dick Roach went to clean up the register, I think. So it was a major effort. And there was no way of sticking on in Kerry at all.
Okay, yeah.
Almost became disenfranchised.
Of course, not that you would ever, ever, ever have entertained using the two of them, of course.
No, well, I didn't have two of them. I didn't.
Oh, yeah, you had one of the
that was kind of a proactive measure at the time. But since then, there's been repeated signals, hasn't there, that the register is in a mess.
Yes. Well, I can say in 2016, I certainly remember getting two votes, one in Galway and one in Dublin. And I do know that when I registered in Dublin, there is the facility on the websites to deregister somewhere else. But from what you're saying...
Did you vote twice, Joe?
No, I certainly did not. But from what you're saying, that facility only works within the Dublin areas.
Well, no, that's the cross-referencing is where that only works in Dublin. Now, you can deregister, but the problem is that it's not the easiest of processes.
Yeah.
It is easier to register than to deregister. And also, while they, I suppose they're in favour, on Comisiún Toghchán, the Electoral Commission, are in favour of people using their PPS number because that's a very unique identifier that you can't make a mistake on. not everybody wants to register that way. They don't have to. You can still go down to your local guard station, fill out the form and register that way. But eventually you'd imagine they'd have to move to that.
One of the other upshots of this, Paul, is that Art O'Leary there of the Uncommissioned Toghan was saying that in actual fact, turnout, the figures that we've been getting is probably a underestimation.
Yeah, there could be 5% higher. So instead of 63, it was 68% turnout. And that's just simply down to the numbers. If you do have 500,000 people who are on the register who shouldn't be on the register, and then you start taking them off, you get a higher percentage of people actually turned out. So maybe we're not as lackadaisical as we thought we were.
Yes, because there was a lot made of the fact that in the election, the general election passed, that it dropped below 60% for the first time. I think it was since 1923 or something like that. It was 59.7%. But in actual fact...
Exactly. So what's also interesting is that this is only the first stage of it. When they are, and indeed what Juliet was just talking about, they're cleaning up the register and making it accurate. What they also do want to do, and this is the next stage of the campaign, is to try and reach out and ensure that as many people as possible who aren't on the register are on the register. And that is to try and ensure that we do increase the number of people who are voting, ensure that our democratic system is functioning as best as possible.
Yeah, I mean, they were saying as well that before, so last year, of course, was a bumper year. We're all still bruised from it. You know, we had the referendum, we had the local elections, European elections and a general election. It was a very, very busy year. And they had 350,000 extra people registering to vote. So people have confidence in the system, and it is a very... I suppose in some ways it's very transparent and very trusted system, but the problem is the register, and we don't have the figures and the data that they want.
And it was the case though, Michal, that even though all these extra people registered to vote, we were told, it didn't seem to turn up in the turnout either. That was something that a lot of people were kind of scratching their heads about how those two things
came together. Because that was a massive surge.
Which I suppose this work is beginning to unravel that why.
Well, yeah, maybe it does. Maybe it does. If there are that extra numbers of people and there are all those duplicates that you didn't see, that reflection in the late registering, which was fairly spectacular by any standards and does show the power of public awareness campaigns, will that be enough to change things?
Yes. Those three categories. One was duplication, the other was death. In other words, someone had died, but their names remained on the register. And the other one was emigration. Mm. They're still with us, but they're just not in the jurisdiction and headed off somewhere else.
And to finish out on this, the electoral register will eventually be one single electoral register under Uncommissioned Toghan, Juliet.
Well,
correct?
So the Department of Local Government Housing and Heritage is engaged in a process already where they are going to have a national centralised database, one single centralised searchable database, but that won't be ready until next, as in autumn of, 2026. So they're still working on that, and then they hope to have other elements that will then be fixed in the next 5 years.
All doubt will be removed then. We'll be able to completely depend on the figures.
But it's
apparently it'll never be 100% accurate.
Yeah, but the Election Commission will have overview. Yeah. But the running of it is the local authorities.
Yes, right. It's not their responsibility.
On another topic, and Michal, you've been busy texting there as we're sitting here.
Putting down some bets on the 350 in Kempton again.
Punchestown is actually in the middle of their second or third day at the moment, fourth day even.
Good weather too.
Do you meet any lad on the bus with a tip, Paul? No.
As we speak, Michal, here, the Cabinet Subcommittee on Housing is probably well underway at this stage, and it has been... kind of a torrid week for the government in so far as the political focus has been on who's going to lead up this housing activation office.
And how much are they going to get paid? It's Brenda McDonagh's salary, which she has as boss and am, of 430,000 above that, actually. That's the problem. That's the thing that's gone up in lights now. Government say that the unit is something that the Housing Commission recommended. They say that Sinn Féin had something similar in their election manifesto. That is a small unit that works with the electricity providers, the water providers and the local authorities to make sure you can get connections and you can get things moving quicker on sites that are facing problems. But it is that issue of pay. That's the thing that's damaging public confidence now. That's the controversy. So does the committee today reach a point where it gets into discussions about essentially bringing that figure down, I think, because that's the only way it can
go. That salary figure of 430 down.
Yeah.
That's 200 grand more than the Taoiseach even gets paid.
It is, you see. And then, of course, the opposition say it's a job share role anyway. That's the other criticism, that this is the work that the Housing Minister James Brown should be doing. So it is controversial then. I don't think it can happen today, though, given that it is so difficult now. Everyone involved is saying this isn't easy. So if it is going to be Brenda McDonagh, and that's the one that James Brown wants, that's the one that Fianna Fáil seem to want, then you feel it will take a little bit more time.
Yeah, and Paul, this was, of course, we're talking about it being delayed a bit more now, but this was trailed in the newspapers last weekend. It was essentially said that it was going to be signed off by Cabinet on Tuesday. Mm. But on Tuesday at the post-Cabinet briefing, which you might explain to us what that is, was the first, I think we heard that certainly Fine Gael had some jitters about this.
Yeah, I mean, Brendan McDonagh's name has been floating around for a couple of months. So we've known that he was the person who's being associated with the position and there wasn't any kickback. After Cabinet, most weeks, on Tuesday, there is a briefing given to political correspondents about what decisions were made at Cabinet. And we were informed just last Tuesday that the view of the Tánaiste and Fine Gael leader Simon Harris was that no name should come into the public domain without it first having been discussed between him, the Tánaiste, and also the Taoiseach. Only at that stage should something happen. And we knew that the previous day, the Housing Minister had been on RT Radio's News at One and he'd said, well, my preferred candidate is Brendan McDonagh. So this was clearly a bit of a cut at the Housing Minister. The following day, we were beginning to hear these little rumbles that people in Fine Gael were very concerned about how this was being handled and also the fact at the wage. It does make you just wonder just exactly, was their heart really in it? Mm. Because we've known this was in the programme for government that this was coming. And everyone has known that Brendan McDonagh has been associated for 2 months. So this sudden rumble from Fine Gael, one was wondering, was it actually about Mr. McDonagh or was it just a bit of positioning they were undertaking themselves? As it currently stands, as Micheál said, we don't know if it is going to be Mr. McDonagh at all. And number two, if it is, just exactly what his wage is going to be. So that's where we're watching.
And do you get any sense, do any of you get any sense just from talking to politicians that they're wary of this, given the opposition argument that people are living in the box room, people are trying to, you know, struggle to pay the rent or whatever, and then you're going to start yet another organ that's supposed to deal with housing, which still hasn't been dealt with, and the guy that's going to lead it up could potentially be paid €430,000.
Yeah, that's the big problem. So you have homelessness numbers going up, rents going up, house prices going up. So all that's still happening. And the thing that's going to be associated with this, which is meant to be the thing that's going to solve a lot of the problems there, the things that are delaying houses being built, that the big issue around all that, the thing that people will resonate with people, is that salary of 430,000. Of course, that's a problem that government TDs, certainly backbenchers, are well aware of. So it's going to be a difficult one to get around. I thought there might be a push to get it all done today, to bite the bullet on it and just get it done. But I think it's just become too big for that now.
Right, I see you texting away on your phone there a couple of minutes ago. Maybe you're hearing the latest from that Cabinet Subcommittee meeting, which you'll share with us later on.
There's just no expectation of a decision right now unless things were to change dramatically, because cutting anyone's salary is a difficult thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so for him to have his salary cut would be a problem in itself, given that that is the salary he is obviously
currently
been on well, as the head of NAMA.
But Piers Doherty of Sinn Féin, the finance spokesperson of the party, was pointing out that NAMA is due to be wound up by the end of the year. So maybe if you let it go to the end of the year, does that mean he's on a different wage? Maybe not if he returns to the National Treasury Management Agency, where he was on a significant wage. So there's just a few balls up in the air. And it seems as if the coalition's getting a little bit of cold feet. We heard an awful lot about process. We need to have a good process.
Yeah, process is the word.
Get this sorted. Process, which sounds like, let's not do it today. Let's kick it into next week.
Mary Lou McDonald was referencing this during the week in the Dáil as well, where she was talking about this whole notion of having a czar. And what's the minister doing there? Is that not the minister's job? Yeah. Is that a difficult argument for the government as well?
No, because they're able to say that this, housing commission looked at this. It said that you needed to have a group of wise people, men and women around a table who were troubleshooters. If you're going to have that, you're going to have a chief executive who's going to have to run that department. Indeed, as Micheál referenced, Sinn Féin had something similar. I suppose the key thing that Sinn Féin is picking up on is the salary. It's not the position, it's more the salary. But I would say that even around Leinster House, on both sides of the benches, I haven't met too many people who are absolutely convinced that this is going to be a big
game changer.
Mm. This will solve things. There's a bit of reticence about it. They're not quite sure how it's going to work out. There's a hesitation to come out and publicly support it. There's just a little bit iffy. And I think to a certain extent, this has the capacity. It's not a prediction, but it has the capacity to become a magnet for controversy. Because when the next round of statistics come up, if it is going through, people are saying, and what about your stupid committee? And what about your stupid €500,000? It's just got that bang off it.
And you'd have to say as well that everyone understands really what the blockages are in terms of housing and in terms of infrastructure and stuff like that. Juliet, I mean, there was no great mystery,
is there? But there's also, this isn't new, you know. I can understand from the government's perspective of wanting to throw everything at the problem. They should have been throwing everything at the problem already. And like you say, we know what the blockages are. There are infrastructural issues. But is it a case of this Housing Activation Office having to, you know, dedicated team going around and going, in this area, it's actually more to do with water, whereas in this area, it's actually more to do with access or planning or NIMBYism or whatever it is. It's very hard to say, but
yeah, because at the back of all of that, then there has to be resource given to Irish Water. There has to be resource given to Transport Infrastructure Ireland, and I mean they have already made public statements. Certainly, Irish Water have that they are limited in what they can deliver.
Bigger problem, And so that does seem to be a government priority as well. But everyone accepts that's a capital issue, isn't it? And of course, there is a new division over in public expenditure as well to try and get those projects done. So, a lot of new units. It's all about silo breaking. I don't like that word silo, do you? Mm-hmm. I just think of silage pits.
And they can be malodorous at times, silage pits. But, let's see how it goes. But there is that sense, though, because there's an infrastructure delivery unit as well set up, as you say, there in that division. And that's going to have people seconded from Irish Water, Transport Infrastructure Ireland and all the rest of them to that as well.
That's going to have the radical zeal of reform. Isn't that what the Minister for Public Expenditure said?
Yeah, delivery.
And a radical zeal.
That's the only word.
Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens with it then and see. As a matter of interest, Micheál, is it TSAR, C-Z-A-R, or TSAR, T-S-A-R?
I was going to say TSAR, but it's been changed by the improvers who work with our text to CZAR.
CZAR, okay.
That's the house style then, okay.
Well, if anybody has any opinions on that particular one, they can send it into us. Paul's looking at me there now. But you can send it into us on europolitics@rte.ie, which is our web address for this
podcast. Did anyone write to you, Joe?
We did, actually. We got a very nice email from Ruth recently, who actually brought up the issue of election posters. And it's interesting because election posters is something that the Commission Toghchán are currently conducting research on at the moment as well.
Yeah, that's right. They've got a public consultation on, and it's an interesting one because I suppose a lot of people have opinions on them. Do they like them? Don't they like them?
Yeah.
Sometimes Abbey Leaks is one. Doesn't have electoral posters, and it's a decision that they came to, and often in conjunction with the Tidy Towns committees and things like that. Because while the political parties and candidates have to take down their posters, often those little tags are the ones that stay up on the polls for
the
ages
tags,
and ages.
I know that the research is going to focus on the importance of this political tool for communication and stuff, as well as environmental and safety and things like that as well.
Speaking of environmental, the Minister with Responsibility for Nature Biology, Christopher O'Sullivan, had an impassioned plea this week about dandelions. That one you see every day. Don't pluck the dandelions.
Say that to a three-year-old.
Yeah, leave them there because the young birds, the juvenile birds, need them in particular at this time of the year, as well as the bees. So this
is a big
intervention.
Don't mow in May.
It's don't mow in May, but it goes beyond that. It's the dandelions growing kind of on verges and in gravel and all that as well. And of course, a bad rep always growing up, hadn't they? We were told keep away from the poisonous, deadly oaks. But apparently they were good. They were good guys all along.
They're experiencing a bit of a comeback, all right, as people reassess nature and the value of these things. Dandelion wine apparently is very good as well. I don't know if any of you have ever had it. But
Never had it.
No.
Maybe somebody could write into us about that. Yourpolitics@rte.ie as well.
So don't damage the dandelions.
Don't damage
them. And just also on health issues, in the last while in the Dáil, the Taoiseach has just given the strongest indication yet that the labelling on alcohol drinks, those health labels that was meant to give you the calorie count and the grams of alcohol, which is meant to happen next May, that looks like it's going to be delayed now. And what he said was the very new trade environment, it has to be reconsidered given the concerns within the industry.
Yeah, that was something that I think Pascal Donohue had made reference to in passing much earlier on in this saga when we were looking at the initial reaction
and
emissions from the White House about tariffs.
That line in government that they have to control the things they can control, and this is one of them. So it seems like that goes on the long finger now.
So the huge breadth of
so the dandelion wine won't have the calorie count.
It won't have the label on it. Okay,
shocking
is right. On a far more sobering matter, there was some statements in the Dáil today in relation to the Farley Commission of Investigation, and essentially we've got to a point with that where the final report has been issued. It has been unsatisfactory, I think, for everyone that has dealt with the commission and indeed been dealing with it since it's been published, Paul.
Yeah.
But there isn't a lot the government, it seems, can do with it from here, is there?
Yeah, the difficulty is that the Commission of Investigation, any which one, including the Farrelly Commission, is independent of government. So it's given a mandate, it goes off, it does its work, and then it brings back a report and says, there you go, and that's it. In this particular case, there's difficulties on a number of fronts. One, just the nature of the report is quite dense. There's no executive summary. There's issues there. Secondly, the subject of it, that's the woman with the pseudonym Grace, who spent most of her life in care, and there were allegations of abuse while she was in foster care.
Yeah.
That the commission report said that while it found neglect and it found financial mismanagement, it didn't find either physical or sexual abuse. And what happened in the Doyle today was that there was a number of people, like John McGuinness, the last Cairn Corla, the Fianna Fáil TD, who has been carrying the campaign for Grace for many, many years. He started reading out some of the really graphic accusations which we believed had been carried out against Grace. Mm. And he was saying this isn't contained in the report. So he was effectively calling out the report because it didn't include that. And then we had the body, which was appointed by the High Court to represent Grace, we learned this week that much of the documentation which they submitted to the Commission of Investigation, well, it isn't represented in the final report. Yeah. And this is a problem. What are you going to do? Because I was just, my colleague Jonah Sullivan had sent in a request to try and find out about the cost of all these things. And she learned from the Department of Public Expenditure that the latest information collated for Q4 of 2024 indicates a figure of €544 million has been spent to date on all inquiries and tribunals, including the recent Farrelly Commission. So the question is, right, there's an awful lot of money going in, but if you're not getting a satisfactory outcome, what are you going to do? And part of that issue is that once the commission produces a report, you don't, the sole member doesn't come before the Oireachtas and answer questions about it.
Yeah.
And that's the big gap.
Yes. And that, when once the report is finished, the commission essentially comes to an end, I think.
The task is completed. You did have that unprecedented event this week where that representative on behalf of Grace, the legal representative effectively, said that there was those extensive submissions made by legal people on Grace's behalf that weren't referred to or included in the report. The Taoiseach and the Dáil, very wary of all this to say anything that could compromise the commission in any way, did say that was worrying, but did say that the government and the state were in very tricky territory here, difficult territory around all this. So it can't go much more. Even the statement that was issued by the Children's Minister yesterday after meeting with that legal representative could only say things about perhaps looking to the future, that if you do have someone with a disability, that their way must be found to help them make a submission to in a way that ensures that submission is included. So there isn't much more that you think will happen with this apart from that lingering sense of grievance that Grace was let down over several decades, and perhaps once again now, clearly that is the view of the legal representatives on her behalf. I suppose government will look to things like legislation. They will look particularly to that vulnerable adult legislation that they're talking about that would make things like neglect and coercive control an offence, to put that down in law pretty quickly.
And not just Grace, because there were dozens of others that were going to be have their cases looked at as part of this as well. And that has, they've decided not to go ahead with that next module, Juliet.
Yeah, and then John McGuinness was talking about that as well, you know, about how there's been a succession of reports that have looked at the allegations of abuse, not just against Grace, but against 47 others who passed through the foster home. And some of the allegations were, they mirrored what the complaints made.
What happened to Grace.
Exactly. And so.
And we cannot understate how terribly
just absolutely
graphic,
desperate stuff. And you could see John McGuinness getting quite emotional today. And we've heard, lots of people are familiar with it, and it's as bad as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And that a significant amount was paid out to the family of Grace by the state, which some would say, was that not an acknowledgement of the terrible things that happened to her, considering how do you compare that and contrast that with what the Farrelly Commission report has found to say, that maybe there was some financial mismanagement and neglect that doesn't, it's hard to square that circle. So, it's very difficult. And the other difficulty, and we've heard Micheál Martin talking about it several times in the past few weeks, is that tribunals are very expensive. The Farrelly Commission, £13.6 million, 7-8 years it took, and now we're wondering, did we get the answers? But people are still calling out for inquiries all the time, and maybe there needs to be a different thought process put around that. Is this the best way to get that information?
On a number of occasions, we've seen him answering these calls for inquiries into Doyle.
Exactly.
And he makes these points. He's very reticent to go down the idea, the route of commission of inquiry or public inquiry.
Because
people call for them all the time.
Yeah, and even if you go back to 2001, we had the Lindsay Tribunal of Inquiry into haemophilia blood products and how they infected Irish people with HIV and hepatitis C as a result of contaminated blood. And at that time, the report came out, the members of the Irish Haemophilia Society were not happy with Judge Alison Lindsay's report at all. Mm. And she took a step which many people regarded as noteworthy, that she wrote a letter to Micheál Martin, who was then the Minister of Health, criticising him for not standing up and protecting, because she was the person who was conducting the work on behalf of the department, and she was operating off guidelines given to her by the Minister for Health. So like this, he's been burned on this one before.
So
and there's
fraught.
Tricky issues there. Yeah. And there's no easy, once again, we're looking, how do we get to the bottom of it? Because we've already curtailed the capacity of this parliament to do the inquiries themselves.
Mm-hmm. It was fraught then, it's fraught now, it remains fraught. Micheál,
and people didn't, when that was put to people in a referendum to give the committees here the real power to carry out those investigations, obviously people didn't think that was a good idea either.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I think the arguments made at the time was that it would give politicians too much power over ordinary citizens, I think, wasn't that it?
Yeah, and I mean, there were radical proposals there, weren't there, that a politician could seek a Garda warrant, get a Garda warrant signed. So essentially, at the whim, perhaps, of a politician, the guards could arrive at your door seeking documents.
Which is all very well if you've got a very balanced political system, but then things can change, as we've seen in other jurisdictions. Just on that committee, the committees, Micheál, we'll finish on this. When are we going to see Oireachtas committees up and running? I'll take a guess from each of you.
I don't think next week, but perhaps the week after. What was noteworthy too is that the government did, probably as expected, dish out some of their own positions to those independents that are now called other members who are supporting them. So Barry Heenahan, who sits far away from Michael Lowry these days, gets to go on the Climate Committee. Matty McGrath on Budgetary Oversight. And Jennifer Toole is
Danny
on
Healy
Disability.
Ray.
And Danny Healy-Ray gets to go on Agriculture, where, of course, he's the direct marker and overseer now of his brother's work.
He'll be holding his brother to account on the Agriculture Committee, Paul.
Just for the crack, I'm going to completely disagree with Micheál Lahan in his prediction. I think that while the Doyle has decided allocation, the Senate, the Shannon is still deciding on its allocation. That's one of the reasons why people think it won't get set up next week, probably the week after. Just getting to the point. Here's the but. But the Public Accounts Committee doesn't have any senators. So it's just TD. So that, I believe that there's no bar in the PAC being up and running this day next week.
So you think the PAC will get their hands on RTE before Alan Kelly's Arts Committee and Media Committee, which are hoping to speak to RTE about that.
And that might be one reason why they would get up and running first, because you get
money.
First dibs, happy days.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, and that RTE little expected to find itself back in the news again. But briefly on this €3.6 million of
an IT system that was commissioned and that was bought with the money from the sale of lands in Montrose, didn't fully work, didn't get up and running. It has been on the books for a while. At the same time, when politicians here were rigorously pouring over everything, when officials in the Department of Arts and Media were looking at things, Patrick O'Donovan, the minister, said today they weren't aware that this figure and this impairment, which was being carried in the annual accounts, actually the reason for it and the exact detail has only been revealed by the currency website in the last while. And of course, it does stem from Patrick O'Donovan's hardline approach that he asked everyone for the full details of major capital projects across the semi-state.
So €3.6 million right down in RTE, very similar to what we saw in the Arts Council, really, wasn't it? Not exactly the same amount of money, but similar scenario, IT systems, etc., etc.
And different in the sense, though, that you had people here for a long time in 2023 who were asked repeatedly by the committee, is there anything else at all you'd like to tell us? And it didn't emerge at that point. And that is the point that Alan Kelly, the chair of the Committee on Media, has been emphasising today. And that's what he's going to ask the RTE bosses when they inevitably make their way down to the bunker in Leinster House again. Now,
and so it is inevitable, Paul. I presume the invites will be issued. There will be they'll be seeking to put RTE management.
Yeah, because we haven't
that's before the committees.
Because we haven't committee meetings in months. There's going to be a queue.
A flurry.
Okay. All right. Well, we will be reporting on every twist and turn of all of these things as they develop. Thanks very much for joining us. If you've joined us on the podcast, you can email us on yourpolitics@rte.ie. But we leave it for the moment, and do join us again.